Hey everybody, today's episode is sponsored by Penzu, your personal journal in the cloud. Penzu is where millions of people keep their most private thoughts, all locked with a secret password. Go to penzu.com, that's spelled P-E-N-Z-U now, and sign up for a free account. For extra security and fun customizations, go to penzu.com/GoPro on your computer and use promo code Radical for $5 off your Pro or Pro Plus subscription. Once again, that's promo code Radical. Now let's get to the show.
This is The Radical Therapist, a space where we explore the intersections of collaborative therapy, philosophy, art, and science and technology in a post-Freud, post-psychology world.
Welcome to The Radical Therapist. This is your host, Chris Hoff. We are now at episode 20, and today we are talking about strangers, specifically with Alan Gregerman, who wrote the book, The Necessity of Strangers, The Intriguing Truth About Insight, Innovation, and Success. And before we get there, I just wanted to share with everybody, those who listened to the last episode knew that I was about to defend my dissertation, and I did that last week successfully. So I am now Dr. Chris. So that's my exciting news, and that was very exciting. A long journey has come to a successful close, and I'm just very excited about that. And so, having done that, I was thinking about, I did that last week, and I was also going to interview Alan last week, and I had these kinds of two things coming together. And after it was done, I found myself in a pretty reflective place and thinking about all the strangers that have actually influenced my life in and out of academia in both large and in small ways. And many of them have become friends, some colleagues and associates, and some have kind of come in my life and out of my life, but still having a very profound impact on my life. And I found myself, as I was preparing for this talk with Alan, just kind of being reflective about the strangers in my life, throughout my life, who have had a profound impact, and found myself with a sense of gratitude that I did have somewhere along the line, not all the time, but and I guess when it meant the most, I had an openness to strangers and who ended up having a very, very profound effect on my life. And so I hope you get a lot out of this conversation. I think it's a really, really important conversation. Alan offers up a lot of tools to begin to, kind of step into what he calls an open mindset as you move through the world. So not to miss out on all the possibilities that strangers can bring into your life. So I think you'll find this a very valuable conversation. So let me tell you a little bit about Alan. Alan Gregerman is an award-winning author, business advisor, and teacher. His writing and consulting work focuses on helping companies and organizations create winning strategies and more remarkable products, services, and customer experiences by unlocking the genius in all of their people. Alan is the author of two previous books, Surrounded by Geniuses and Lessons from the Sandbox. He lives in the Washington, D.C. area with his family. And so for those of you who Alan is a stranger, he will no longer be a stranger after this talk. So let's meet him now. All right. Welcome to the show, Alan. I appreciate you being here.
Well, greetings. Thanks for inviting me. I'm looking forward to our conversation and sharing some ideas with your audience.
Yeah, awesome. I guess I should start by saying I met you, I saw you give a keynote at the AMFT Leadership Symposium, and you talked about your most recent book, which the title I love is The Necessity of Strangers, and even the title really captured my interest. So, but I saw the talk you gave on the necessity of strangers and innovation and insight and those kinds of things, and true to form, the conference ended, and then I found myself out waiting for the airport shuttle. And you were there as well. And so then, true to form, we struck up conversation. You weren't afraid to have a conversation with a stranger. And here we are having a podcast together, which I think is neat. But anyway, I'm really looking forward to having you kind of take us through your book, because there's a lot of great ideas in here, and I'm really that I really appreciate. But I want to start, I guess, this project. As I understand it, this project was sparked on a morning walk you had with your daughter, and I was wondering if you could tell our audience more about that.
Yeah, no, that would be great. First, as just a little bit of background, so what I, you know, as you suggested, what I do is I work with companies and organizations to help them kind of unlock the genius in all of their people and to come up with new and better ways of doing the things that really matter most to them,
right,
and the customers that they serve. And so I'm constantly focused on kind of innovation and thinking differently. And so I've been thinking for many, many years just about the power of getting different perspectives. But I think the idea for this book really crystallized, I want to say, a while ago, probably about 8 years ago, when I was walking our middle daughter, Carly, to the bus. And it's something that my wife and I did regularly. But on a particular day when we were walking to the bus, we happened to pass a fellow that I'd never seen in our neighborhood before, and a fellow who, from my kind of protective parental eyes, looked a little bit troubling to me. Hmm. He was talking to himself. He looked a bit disheveled. Some of the things he was saying were probably not the most appropriate things for a 9-year-old to hear. And so once he got out of earshot, I turned to Carly and I said, well, you know, sweetheart, Mama and Papa can't always walk you to the bus every day. And so I'd like you to promise me on those days when you have to walk to the bus yourself that you won't talk to strangers. It seemed after that experience that morning to be pretty sound and important advice, and seemed like advice that all of our parents had been telling us, you know, when we were kids, just to keep us safer. But what was interesting was Carly then looked up at me and said, but Papa, if I don't talk to strangers, how will I ever make new friends? Hmm. And how will I ever learn new things?
That's great.
And I think at that moment, it kind of crystallized for me that with a little bit of caution, strangers are really the key for an awful lot of us to learning new things and making new connections and building friendships that stretch our kind of network and stretch our thinking about a world of possibilities.
Yeah. And so you describe in the book, like in the beginning, that we live in a world where we're, and you just described it nicely, that we were conditioned or to fear or avoid strangers. But you argue that strangers force us out of our comfort zones, challenge us to question knowledge, beliefs, and habits we hold dear. And I would like you to say more about that, please.
Yeah, so that's a perfectly reasonable question. So I tend to think, you know, from the time we were kids, we were cautioned that strangers are potentially dangerous to us. And I think, unfortunately, there have been incidents in which strangers certainly have caused kids and other people harm. So it's not as though every single person out there is a perfect connection for us or somebody that we ought to kind of reach out to and embrace. But at the same time, my guess is 99% of people out there are worth knowing. And my guess is also that folks who are different than us in many ways are really worth knowing, because those are the folks who are going to stretch us to think in new ways. The reality is most of us tend to hang out with people who are an awful lot like us.
Right.
People whose backgrounds are relatively the same as ours. People whose level of education is relatively the same as ours, people whose interests often overlap significantly with ours. We tend to gravitate to people who are like us. And so that's absolutely awesome. But to the extent that we gravitate toward people who are like us, then the reality is we're not kind of opening our lens as much as we might choose to, or as much as we might find possible, in a way that kind of enlivens our world and opens us up to new possibilities. And so what I like to think about is that friends are super important to us, but friends can only get us so far. And that if we generally hang out with people who are a lot like us, we've limited our potential to think in new ways and potentially reinvent the stuff that matters to us and do more remarkable things. And so I'm regularly trying to cast a wider net, to look to connect with people who know things that I absolutely don't know anything about and have different perspectives, in the hope that those different perspectives are truly going to enable me to look at the world very, very differently.
Yeah, and we'll get to how you do that, but before that, you make the statement that it's really important that we understand clearly why we tend to avoid or dismiss or even fear strangers, and I'm wondering if you could describe what factors make up this seemingly embedded aversion. And I also know you wrote that a lot of this is implicit, that, you know, that this prejudice, we don't even know it's there.
Yeah, no, and I think there's a fair amount of research about it. So when I was kind of putting this book together, there was a lot of research to rely on that simply confirmed this kind of notion that we tend to avoid people who are different than us. Think about it even in a typical workplace, and it kind of rears its interesting head in a bunch of different dimensions. We seem really kind of disinclined to connect with or even be open to people who are different than us on a lot of different dimensions. Mm. And it can be different dimensions that are simply that they are from a different generation or a different age, or they're from a different culture or background, or they even do a very different type of job, and as a result of it, we tend to think that they kind of think and engage the world very differently. So think about the function that you might perform in an organization and the type of training you've had, which has taught you how to think about the world in a certain way. Now think about people in all these other functions who have been trained in different ways, look at the world in different ways, and we instantly have a sense, oh, that person's in finance, they must only think about the numbers of something. Hmm. Or that person's in sales and marketing, those people must only look at the world through a sales and marketing lens. It's all about convincing people, whether they have good stuff or not, that they ought to buy something. Or those people are in human resources. They're the touchy-feely people. They really don't understand what we're trying to accomplish here. Or those folks are lawyers. They're constantly trying to stop us from doing something that might be new and innovative. So on a bunch of different dimensions, we tend to have kind of these built-in prejudices about people. And those prejudices keep us from being open to engaging people who are different than us. So that's one of the things. Another thing that goes on is we tend as part of organizations to pretty quickly get with the program. And that program suggests that in this organization, we tend to think in a certain way, and that the folks who tend to master that way of thinking, like the group, tend to end up being the most successful. So we tend to start to conform in an organization to what are the kind of operative ways that most people like to think, or the organization suggesting we ought to be thinking. So that's an important thing. The other thing is, I'm assuming that a lot of the folks who listen to this show have made a pretty significant investment to become expert in something, whether they have a master's or even a PhD, whether they've spent 10 or 15 or 20 or even more years than that, honing their craft and becoming experts, whether it's in marriage and family therapy or other aspects of counseling or other disciplines. And so when we do that, then suddenly when faced with a stranger who might look at the world very differently, we kind of circle the wagons around our own belief that we know best, that our expertise and our experience is so compelling that probably there aren't a lot of things we might learn from somebody who has a different view or a different worldview, as opposed to thinking about what I know probably is pretty valuable, but it can always be enhanced by thinking in some new ways and learning from people who think differently. So there are a bunch of things that are going on. And there's even some interesting thinking that's been done. I don't know how many of your listeners read a book or heard about a theory that came out a number of years ago, which was a theory called the kind of invisible gorilla. And it was based on an experiment that some folks did in which they had a bunch of people who worked for the same organization playing a game. And that game could be throwing a ball to each other and having to focus on throwing a ball and catching it and throwing it on to the next person. At the same time they were doing this, someone dressed in a gorilla suit walked across kind of the area in which they were doing this. And interestingly, an awful lot of people didn't even notice them. They were so focused on the task at hand and the job that they were doing. And so the theory that these people talked about was the notion that even when there are other ideas or possibilities or people in our midst who are dramatically different than us, but who ought to deserve part of our attention, we're often so caught up in what we're doing that we simply ignore them or don't notice them. And so that's a powerful thing to think about as well. So there are all these things going on that would lead us, if we're not super open to the possibility or the power of connecting with other folks, to simply not kind of doing the things we need to do to reach out and connect.
So are you, I don't want to say anti, but do you caution people about taking these expert positions? Or, and maybe that really leads into my next question, where you talk about a closed and an opened mindset. And I'm wondering if kind of that expertness actually is heavily weighted on the closed mindset side rather than the open mindset side.
So that's really fair. So I have to be honest, given that what I'm trying to do with organizations and leaders and individuals is help them to stretch their thinking to come up with new and better ways of doing things, I do spend a fair amount of time cautioning or engaging people to think about the fact that they need to break out from patterns that make them believe that they kind of know it all, or their organization knows it all, or there's not a lot that we can learn from people who are in different walks of life, from different cultures, do different things than we do. And I'm pretty determined to get them to understand that while there's an awful lot of value in most of the things we do in having expertise, that we have to temper our expertise with a bit more open-mindedness. So you have to understand the limits of our expertise. We have to understand those aspects of what we do in which our expertise is vital, and those aspects of what we do in which our expertise at times could limit our ability to help the folks that we serve to get to where they need to get to. And so I think expertise is a double-edged sword. You know, we wouldn't go to a heart surgeon who wasn't expert in doing heart surgery. But at the same time, hopefully we wouldn't go to a heart surgeon who wasn't also open to thinking about new advances and possibilities beyond the kind of systematic way that they've always done heart surgery.
Right.
And so I think we always have to be regularly thinking about, we want to be working with and dealing with people who are open-minded, confident about what they know, but also confident of the limits of what they know, and eager to continually get new knowledge that makes them better at what they do.
And using the heart surgeon analogy, and just on a side note, you have experience with that, and you write about it in the book.
I have a fair amount of experience with it, or plenty of experience with it, given that I had, you know, as a child, kind of a major heart defect. And 22 years ago, I guess I had a team of 11 doctors and surgeons who were kind enough to surgically remove and reconstruct part of my heart.
Wow.
And put it back in me. And I'm glad to say it seems to still be working pretty darn well. But it was interesting because the surgery that I needed to have 22 years ago was a surgery that hadn't been done by an awful lot of surgeons. And in fact, at the time, there was a standard way of kind of repairing this kind of part or chamber of a heart. And that standard way didn't necessarily enable the folks who'd had their surgery to live a kind of full and unencumbered life. And so it turned out a doctor in Paris had figured out a way to kind of rebuild a valve and a chamber of a heart in a way that took someone's own tissue and use that as the basis for kind of a reconstruction, a much more complicated surgery than kind of replacing with artificial parts this kind of valve and reconnecting it in certain ways to one of the heart chambers. And so I was quite fortunate that one of the five doctors in North America who'd gone to Paris to learn this procedure happened to be in Washington, D.C. and happened to be like a remarkable guy. And by his willingness to learn new ways happened to create kind of an opportunity for me to actually be kind of, I hope, kind of fully kind of rebuilt in a way that allowed me to go on with my kind of life and do everything I'd like to do.
That's great. Yeah. Okay. So back to closed and open mindset. Can you say a little bit more about that and then run us through the principles or the guiding, your guiding principles of open mindset?
That's perfect. I'd be delighted to do that. Okay. So, I mean, think about this, and I'd love for your listeners to think about, you know, kind of where they stand and to be kind of candid, because this is not like a, you don't get graded on this test, but it's really a little bit about kind of self-awareness in a way and kind of understanding those times when maybe we're not as open to new ideas as possible. And so if we think about it, and so I use these terms, kind of closed mindset, and that is that we're not so open to other ideas. And I think the things that when I work with people, I see as, and organizations, I see as kind of a hallmark of the this kind of way of looking at the world is that generally people have kind of what I call a closed mindset, or people who seem to kind of feel that they and their organizations know best. They also feel that there is a best way to do things, and that it's not really, there's not really a gray area, that there really is kind of one best way to do things, and that's the way they've worked hard to kind of learn and master. There are also folks who tend to be focused on trying to get immediate results as opposed to looking at results being kind of a process or a journey to get to a destination that might be more compelling than the immediate results seem to suggest. There are people who rely on a certain set or kind of type of expertise, and they believe that that tends to be the most important determinant of whether we can solve a problem. I think there are folks who tend, when they have a challenge that they can't quite solve, there are folks who tend to invite like-minded people, the other folks they know and trust who tend to work on things the way they work on things, to be part of helping them come up with a solution. There are also people who are probably a little bit less open to sharing the things they know, and sharing the things they know as the starting point for trying to learn new things and think in new ways. And there are also people who tend to rely on those folks closest to them. So that's kind of the closed mindset. You know, and you know, in some ways all of us have situations in which that's kind of the way we do things. But contrast that with what I call an open mindset. And that's people who approach every situation knowing that they know some things that could help them to be more successful, but also knowing that they may not know it all, and they may not know the best solution. That in order to solve a particular problem, they ought to take this step of really trying to discover what are all the ideas out there that could help us think in new ways. There are also folks who believe that there are many ways to solve a problem, that there are very few problems in life that have only one solution or one perfect solution. And that in order to figure out the array of solutions and then choose the best ones, they ought to cast a bit of a wider net to see what other people are thinking about and what other inspirations might exist, not only in their own world, but in other industries, other walks of life, other communities, lots of other different places. There are also people who believe that in approaching a situation, having an open mind is kind of a good thing to have. That we shouldn't rush into a situation pretty much thinking that we know the answer, but we ought to pause and imagine that maybe there are a bunch of different answers. Tied to this, they engage a broader group of people. They're not simply wedded to the people they know who think like them. And they tend to believe in that regard that strangers actually are pretty important, especially if we can find the right strangers who have some ideas that might stir the pot in a positive way. And that once I discover something, I ought to be open to sharing that idea. Now, if you want to think about kind of some different variations, and I'm guessing we'll probably get to some of these things, but just as an example here, what's interesting to me is if you look at what's viewed, at least right now, as kind of one of the rising stars in the automotive industry for a variety of reasons, and we'll see how they end up doing, it's Tesla Motors.
Yep.
These folks who come up with this remarkable electric vehicle and have a broader concept of how we might relate to the world and how we might change our energy footprint in order to make the world a more sustainable place. What's interesting is they've developed all these cutting-edge technologies and ideas. Is the folks at Tesla have made all of their patents and intellectual capital available to the broader world.
Really?
They're all out there to use.
I didn't know
that. So their idea is, you know, we're not going to create electric vehicles for everyone on Earth, We believe this is important. We believe we have some interesting insights, though we're continuing to work on some new insights. But we also believe that if we put our ideas out there and spark some other people's thinking, then maybe, just maybe, we're going to get to our ultimate objective through a more kind of collaboration and information sharing. Now, compare that maybe to some traditional automakers, and I won't mention any particular names, but automakers who keep all of their ideas under wraps as their trade secrets until they get a product out into the marketplace, then interestingly battle to protect their ideas so nobody else will use them. Those include our dear friends at Volkswagen, who created this awesome idea of how you could cheat the system and make it appear that you got way greater benefits environmentally from your cars, even though you didn't, based on a tweak in software. Right. And yet that software was guarded and protected. Interesting. As opposed to saying to the broader world, we're all in this together. Can we share ideas and technology that actually work for making the world a bit of a greener place?
And I really liked your this idea of people not being comfortable in the gray, and that's being very important. And you really are a proponent of, in the book, of humility and curiosity. Could you say a little bit about that?
Yeah, so think about that. So if, in fact, we want to have a more open mindset, and if, in fact, we even realize that we've got a bit of a closed mindset, and we're trying to figure out what are a few basic skills that are going to help us to think about it, a little bit of kind of our mantra every morning when we wake up, then it really dawns on me that there are only a few basic principles that we need to kind of understand and then work on. And those basic principles are pretty simple, and I think they're just part of kind of what I think helps us all to have a bit more fulfilled kind of life, whether we're focused on using these ideas and the book in our personal life or our social and civic life or in our work life. And they really are the notion of kind of humility, which I think is a pretty powerful human attribute.
Right.
You don't see a ton of it during our political season.
Right.
But I think for the rest of us, it's kind of important. And so what does humility say? I mean, humility is really about the notion that I actually don't know it all, and that the stuff that I know isn't the sum total of what is needed to know, and that the stuff that I know isn't necessarily the most important stuff to know in all situations. And so I think it's more important to know what we don't know, which is most things, than it is to be doggedly focused on the power of what we do know. So I think humility is important. If I can actually be humble about what I know, that's going to allow me then to say, so there are lots of gaps in my knowledge. Why not go out there and kind of engage the world and engage other people and try and figure out other things to know and what they know? So I think that's an important thing. So that's the first one I'd say. The second is I need to be curious. And so I think curiosity is kind of an easy thing for people to rediscover. And I say easy to rediscover because as kids, all of us were super curious. That's right. Really an important part of being a kid. If we weren't super curious, we never would have made it through the stages of childhood into kind of adulthood, because as kids, we kind of basically knew nothing. And we had to, with the help of parents, siblings, friends, and our own curiosity, kind of figure things out. So humility says, I don't know everything. Curiosity says, but I actually want to know a bunch of stuff. I want to know a lot of new stuff. I want to kind of connect with people. I want to be open to possibilities, because that's the way I learn and grow. So I'd say curiosity is kind of the second principle. The third principle is, so if I'm humble about what I know and I'm actually curious about other people, then I have to actually be respectful of a variety of things I'm going to learn, which may on the face of it kind of disagree or be somewhat different than the stuff I already know and believe. And it doesn't mean I have to believe all the stuff that I kind of discover from connecting with people, but it does mean that I have to be open to what other people know, and at least open to, even if I don't buy into it, appreciating what they know and valuing that it's important for them. Right. So the notion of respecting other people. Tied to this, I would love people to think about a very simple notion, and that is, I firmly believe that I can learn something from every other person on the planet.
Right.
And If I believe that, then my challenge is to figure out what other people know that I don't know that either helps me confirm what I know or helps me to think more critically about what I know or helps me to imagine that there are additional things that I ought to know. So this kind of notion of kind of being respectful of all other people, whether they are, you know, an artist or an executive or an inmate in a prison or a homeless person or anyone else, I believe they have something that I can learn if I'm respectful of them and the place or position that they find themselves in. So I think that's really important for folks to think about. And then the last thing I like people to think about is I believe it's important to have all of these attributes or follow these principles just as a way that we kind of live our life. But I believe they take on even more meaning if, in fact, I tie them to some purpose in my life, my personal life, my social or civic life, my corporate or organizational life, and that it's a purpose that really matters to me. Because if I'm working on something that really matters to me, and whether it's in my practice, I'm really working hard to develop the capability to help people to truly kind of figure out again how to celebrate their relationships and get the most out of life, either with the people they're in relationships with or moving on to new relationships, whatever the case is, whatever my purpose is, that purpose ought to then drive me, I hope, to cast this wider net, be humble about the things that I didn't understand well enough, be determined to figure out kind of tools and approaches that are going to help me be way more successful or have a greater impact or whatever the case is. And tied to that purpose, I start to think about these tools and these principles really being my guides to getting the most out of the world around me and honing my ability to make a difference.
That's great. Okay. All right. So moving on to practice or putting this into practice, and I guess I'm going to start, you know, collaboration's pretty hot now or has been for a little while. So I'm wondering, what are your thoughts about collaboration and how collaboration works when several strangers are put together and told to collaborate, right?
Yeah, no, so that's a really good question. And so I like to think about this in a few different ways. And so we have to connect, you know, interestingly, in almost all of our aspects of life, all the different parts of our life, I believe, kind of with strangers, and we have opportunities to really make remarkable things happen, again, if we connect with different people and combine what they know with what we know. I mean, simply think about the notion that if I bring a group of strangers together with the right intentions, who all know a bunch of different things, while the process may be a little bit harder to manage, the potential to do something remarkable is way greater than bringing together a bunch of people who are close personal friends or close work friends who tend to look at the world the same way. But so having said that, I really need to figure out now how to tap all these kind of divergent ideas. But first, I have to cut through the difference in a fundamental way. And so here's the thing I'd like people to think about. We tend, and it goes back to something we were talking about before, we tend to make first judgments about people based on their differences more often than their similarities. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to see people or find out about people, and we pretty quickly look to see what's different about them. And often those differences then make it a little bit harder for us to kind of work together and collaborate. And I believe there's one simple step that we can take that's going to change the equation kind of dramatically. And that simple step is to begin any engagement with strangers by first focusing on our similarities. Hmm. And so what I like to do is I like to, in a group that I'm working with of strangers, people who've come together to solve a problem, to begin with one very simple activity. And that is I ask people to pair off with somebody they don't know, and I ask them to spend 5 minutes having a conversation with that person and seeking to discover at least 10 things they have in common with that person that have nothing to do with work or the task at hand, to build a bond of collaboration based on our similarities. It turns out this is, you know, and it's such a simple thing to do, turns out for a lot of people to be a powerful breakthrough. because what they see is that actually, even with people they think are super different than them, they easily will find 10 things they have in common, because fundamentally, as humans, we're way more similar than we're different. Now, armed with these similarities, it becomes way easier to work with somebody, even if they are different, because I have a different type of connection with them. So now I seem to be way more open to their ideas or suggestions as we try to tackle a challenge than I would have been if I simply got into it, looked at them across the table, determined they were an engineer with a very structured way of thinking of the world,
right,
or that they came from a different place, or they were from a different generation, kind of didn't understand my generation, whatever the case is.
Right.
So I tend to kind of change the equation. Now I can do a bunch of things that start to spark our thinking and bring out our differences in ways that are productive. And there are a bunch of those things that are pretty straightforward, I think, and I tried to kind of capture them in a way that's usable, you know, in The Necessity of Strangers, but are things like, I challenge all of us to share a question that's a powerful question that stretches our thinking.
That's great.
So it's a big question, and that big question could simply be, if we were to be the most remarkable at solving this problem, or if we were to use technology in new ways, or if we were to figure out, you know, how to bring a variety of cultures to bear to truly create a fusion of a solution, what might we do? So I start to think about that. I might also start to collaborate by suggesting to everybody that before we start a discussion, everyone writes down an idea that really inspires them about how they might look at this challenge. And then I might anonymously ask them to put all their ideas kind of up on the wall without any attribution. And then ask everybody to go up and explore this world of ideas and start to think about how these ideas then make a powerful connection with something that they've been thinking about. So using somebody else's ideas to stretch mine as a starting point. I might also do something that I like to call kind of a capability or kind of personal assets census, in which I ask everybody in the group before we start talking about it to kind of list all the things that they're passionate about and all the things that they think, if there's an opportunity, they might have some relevant kind of expertise about. And then I look at this landscape and now see all the potential sets of talent that we might bring to bear. Or there's a bunch of other things, you know, so there are lots of ways now to get people to kind of take the, I think, a little bit of the kind of focus or emphasis off their differences and a little bit about how are we similar, then what are some possibilities that we might use to kick off trying to solve a challenge?
And that's how you foster collaboration and engagement. And
right.
Ways
and, okay. Yeah, and then now inside an organization, there's some things I can do on an everyday basis. You know, so I mentioned this idea of having people sit down at a meeting to kind of find their similarities. But inside an organization, I might ask people once a day until they've kind of connected with everybody to find somebody in the organization they don't know very well, and over a cup of coffee or a cup of tea or another favorite beverage, to sit down with them, you know, for 10 or 15 or 20 minutes and simply get to know them a little bit better so that we create an organization in which everybody has a comfort level and some connections with everybody else. I might then, as a next step, ask people to have another coffee or a tea with people they don't know very well, tied to a key question that we're wrestling with in an organization that challenges all of us to kind of stretch and think in new ways. I might challenge everyone, and this has been particularly rewarding, as I have some companies and organizations that have asked all of their folks in a certain month to kind of read The Necessity of Strangers together and then have conversations about the ideas in the book that struck them and how they can use those ideas to enhance innovation and collaboration in their organization. But whether it's The Necessity of Strangers or another book, having something shared that we ask everybody to kind of read and then through their lens seek to kind of combine ideas about what's possible. So there are lots of different things that I would do all around kind of stretching people's thinking and then getting them to collaborate first by connecting with each other. That, to me, is the fundamental thing that's missing in lots of efforts to collaborate.
That's great. Okay. You spend some time in the book, which I really appreciate because I love to travel, and I think if anything has shaped me or informed me or shifted me, Travel has certainly done that. But you spend some time on that, about the experiences of travel, and you write about the power of travel. Can you say more about that?
Oh, sure. I could talk about this one for days, actually. Right. You know, just like you, Chris, I love to travel. And I believe that travel with an open mind, with the things we were talking about a few moments ago, a sense of humility, curiosity, and a sense of respect for other people and their cultures, I believe travel is possibly the greatest thing that any human being has the privilege or opportunity to do.
Right.
Because if we think about travel in the right light, then travel is truly a remarkable opportunity to break down barriers with other people, often people who are very different that we might only know about from reading about them on a blog or in the newspapers, to kind of get to understand their world, to get to understand new cultures, to learn new things. Travel is really a way that we have the chance to really experience kind of what I think of as the joy of discovery, to make new connections and build new relationships. I think of travel as really a way to kind of understand ourselves better by putting ourselves in an environment that's different, by challenging ourselves first to kind of do things we'd never done before, but also to be open to other people. So there's so many reasons why I think travel is particularly compelling. You know, and tied to all that, the ability to connect with other human beings and to show our ability to really kind of broaden our connections to people who are different than us. So I think travel is super, super compelling. Hmm. And I think travel can be around the corner or around the world. So right. I don't want people to hear this and say, you know, that what I truly have to do is I need to, you know, take some big trip to a really faraway place. The reality is, for those of your listeners who live in a metropolitan area, there are corners of your community in which there are people from other places who are hopefully carrying on traditions that have been important to them and their culture, even as they kind of assimilate into kind of the culture of your community, that give us a chance to kind of learn and grow without even having to get that far. But if we have the luxury of going to someplace, you know, that's a ways away and very different, then I think we ought to welcome that. And we ought to do it with the sense that I want to discover what really matters to other people, some of which is going to be the exact same thing that matters to me. Family, community, making a difference in the world, my connection to kind of the environment, a whole variety of different things, my love of music or art or cuisine or whatever the case is. But I want to go to these places with an eye toward figuring out how I can learn new things that just make me kind of richer. I have to be honest. I mean, I do get to speak a fair amount at a lot of kind of conferences and meetings. And whenever it's someplace I've never been, whether it's someplace else in the U.S. or in another country, I am, quite honestly, all over it. Because I look forward to engaging other audiences, and I look forward to learning what they know, and I also look forward to going to other places in which I'm going to learn a lot of things. But I'd love people to think about that travel is just such a powerful way to really break down our stereotypes of people, challenge our notion that there's only one way to kind of do things, be open to people who for, you know, generations and generations have really thought about and looked at the world in some different ways. And so I'd love people to think about that. I mean, imagine this, you know, I don't want to go on too long, but imagine this. So in the history of human habitation on Earth, there have been roughly 7,000 unique cultures. My guess is they endured because there was something they knew that was a powerful glue that held them together and some things they figured out about how to engage the world and how to engage each other. And my guess is if we could meet people from any one of those cultures, we would learn new things, that we could have learned something from every one of those cultures, even cultures that for some reason no longer exist. And it behooves us to have that open mind about kind of learning, because that enriches us. And I believe over time it makes the world hopefully a more positive and harmonious place if more people understand people who are different than them.
That's great. Okay. So finally, can you share some of the tools from you at the end of the book? You provide a toolkit, and I was wondering if you could share some of those tools from the toolkit so our listeners can begin to take some steps in stretching their thinking about strangers.
Yeah, so that would be awesome. So I mean, let me start with a few simple ones. So I have this really odd habit. Now, it's a little bit more challenging in a world where everything's gone electronic. But it used to be when I would go in to start working with a new company or organization, I would ask them if I could look in their inboxes. Hmm. You know, and in the olden days, they had like wooden inboxes, you know, in the corner of their desk. And that's where all kinds of things came in. Some of the stuff I realized was business confidential. But more importantly, I was looking to see kind of the stuff that caught their attention, the things they would read, to try and gauge whether or not they were really casting a wide enough net. So imagine, typically, if you're in an organization, the things you read are things about kind of your industry or practice, whether it's marriage and family therapy or the organic beverage industry or whatever the case is, or the automotive industry.
Right.
So people would have stuff about their industry. What are the things going on in their industry? And they'd also have stuff about their kind of profession. You know, and so if somebody was in human resources, they'd have a bunch of HR types of publications. And now they get them as blogs or things that are electronic. And if they were even more specialized and worked in the areas of like training or compensation, they'd have specific things to that. And what I noticed was folks were really reading a broader set of things to open their minds up to ideas. So the first tool I find, which is just a simple thing to do, is for all of us to broaden the things we read, to in essence do an upgrade of our inboxes. And by that, I mean to read things that are generally things that have to do with ideas across a wide range of kind of industries and perspectives. Mm. So whether those things are things like Fast Company and Wired magazine, which talk about kind of innovations and new ideas across lots of industries, or if you like history, kind of Smithsonian magazine, or even National Geographic, which talks about different places, or I'm kind of really into like technologies and tangible stuff. So I read Popular Mechanics. I read Popular Science. I read Nature. I read Scientific American, just to think about ideas across a wide variety of spaces that might get me to have a deeper understanding of them and might get me to think and apply those ideas in other places.
Right.
That's one thing you can do. I also believe that organizations prosper when they do get people to kind of read things that spark their interest, whether those are books or blogs or newsletters or magazines. So it's a really simple thing to do to ask somebody who you think in your organization is particularly curious and open-minded, to go around and kind of curate a mini library of sorts, and they can get ideas from all of the members of your team about things they like to read that are outside of your field that they find to be interesting and stimulating.
Yeah, I like that.
Then to create a little library that can be on a push cart, and once a week to roll this library down the hallways of your workplace, asking people to take something to read that they might not normally take to read and commit to spending an hour or so looking through it, looking for new ideas. Hmm. That seems to be a super cool and simple way to stir the pot. Now, I also spend an awful lot of the time that I work with our customers actually getting them out of the office.
Yeah.
And taking them to explore the community and world around them, taking them to kind of world-class businesses in their community or hip new restaurants, that's a tough assignment, or to performances or neighborhoods or even museums. And I'd love to suggest that once a month, just maybe in an afternoon, that, you know, companies and organizations or large practices or medium-sized practices simply decide that we're going to have an afternoon in which we're going to kind of explore and stretch our thinking. And so you think about where we can go just to get some new ideas and insight. And we do that as a group, just so we have a shared experience of kind of looking and thinking about the world in a different way. You can start with something as simple as going to an art museum and simply exploring an art museum together and challenging people to think about what's the artist's view of the world and how might an artist kind of look at our workplace and inspire us to think in some different ways about the painting that each and every day we create. So I love people to think about that.
That's great.
I also love people to think about the notion of carrying a journal and being more conscious of the cool things you see all around you. So it turns out lots of famous people carried journals, and they wrote down notes when they saw something that was intriguing in nature or in society or whatever the case is. So one of the things that I think is cool for bosses to do is give everybody a journal and simply say, what I'd like you to do is, when you see something cool that we're doing or in any other walk of life or in any other aspect of your life, please jot it down and let's periodically share cool ideas and think about whether those cool ideas can be applied to our world. So those are a few basic tools that I like people to think about. I also like the idea of asking people, if you could hang out for a day with anyone throughout history that you believe might provide some insight to us, who would that person be? Or maybe they have a couple people that they might be keen on. And then I think it's kind of cool once a month, maybe over a brown bag lunch, to pick one of those people and ask the person who suggested them to do a little bit of homework to start us off. Begin the conversation by just sharing a little bit about who this person was, what contribution they made, and what they seemed to know. And then use that as an opportunity as a group to talk about a conversation with that person focused on how we might be way more remarkable at the things we do based on the lens or window or experience that we believe that person had and their real contribution. So those are just a few ideas that I hope would get people started. You know, and in the book I try to explain exactly, you know, in hopefully practical terms, how you actually take these types of techniques and some others and actually put them to use.
That's great. And it's all there in the book, The Necessity of Strangers. And before I let you go, Alan, can you tell people how to get a hold of you if they have questions or want to find you? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah. So I certainly would love to kind of get feedback or connect with people who are listening. And so the easiest way probably is my email, which is simply innovate, INNOVATE, at venture-works.com. Or another way is simply people can connect with me by subscribing to my blog, which is simply alangregerman.com. And I won't use your name or email or anything like that. And I kind of basically once a month, I put ideas out there from all walks of life that might get you to think in new ways about what you do. And so that's a pretty easy way. And once you subscribe to the blog, then it has a way for you also to send me an email directly. That would be great. So I would be delighted, and I respond to all emails. And within 24 hours, I travel a bit, but you know, if somebody sends me an email, I guarantee within 24 hours that I will get back to you and would be delighted to connect.
And I can confirm that is accurate. So,
okay, good.
And Alan, and I will, just for all the listeners, I will have all his links in the show notes, so you can find them there as well. And I just want to say, Alan, thank you very much. It's a wonderful book, The Necessity of Strangers, The Intriguing Truth About Insight, Innovation, and Success. You should all go get it. And Alan, thank you for spending some time with us.
Well, thank you, Chris. This has been great fun. It's great meeting you, and I'm delighted that I had the chance to have this conversation with you.
Great. Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Well, that's our show, and I hope you got as much out of that as I did. And I hope you're going to hold on to some of those ideas and tools that Alan talked about as you begin to move through the world again. And I hope you stay open and just kind of keep that open mindset that Alan talked about as you move through the world, so as not to miss all the possibilities that strangers might bring into your life. So this has been The Radical Therapist. I should probably let you know that you can reach me and email me at theradicaltherapist@gmail.com. We're on Facebook at The Radical Therapist. We're on Instagram at The Radical Therapist. We're on Twitter at The Rad Therapist. And we have a website, theradicaltherapist.com. I think I said that, but just in case. But anyway, please always reach out to me. I have stickers still. So if you'd like some Radical Therapist stickers, just shoot me an email and I'll get them to you. And we just, as always, appreciate you listening to the show. And I'm going to keep trying to curate other ideas to bring to you that hopefully you are finding valuable. So this has been The Radical Therapist. My name's Chris Hoff. Thanks for listening.